So I'm delighted to be joined by a friend of Women's Soccer Zone, someone who's been on the show a few times. She's even had the privilege of holding the microphone on one occasion when she interviewed Sydney Leroux for us last year. I am joined by Megan Rapinoe. Pino, how you doing, mate? You all right?
Yeah, I'm doing really good. Thanks for having me on.
It's always a pleasure. Always a pleasure. Now, the purpose for having you on for this special one-off interview is to talk about the fact that you reached recently your 100th cap for the US women's national team in the 4-0 win over New Zealand. Now, tell me what it was like going out onto that field and hearing the national anthem, knowing that it was the 100th time that you had done so.
Yes, I mean, it's such a special feeling. It's kind of interesting because while that was my 100th cap, I actually am sort of choosing to celebrate it in the next game because it's closer to where my family's from. So that'll sort of be like the big kind of hoopla. But still, I think, you know, I kind of was able to reflect upon it a little bit. And it really is a huge accomplishment to play that many games, I think, in an era that we've had a really incredible side and, you know, won 2 gold medals and to kind of span that and just think of where I was in my first cap against Ireland, just a wee one, and think of, I guess, you know, how far I've come and what I've had to overcome and, you know, just the joy that I've had pulling on that shirt 100 times. It never gets old, that's for sure. I think every time I put that shirt on, it's something that's really special. I'm hearing that national anthem and to celebrate it and, you know, or to at least have it done in St. Louis, and we had 35,000 people, such an incredible atmosphere, was something that was really special to me.
You mentioned that your next cap will be a bit closer to home when you face the Republic of Ireland on the 10th of May in San Jose. Incidentally, and funnily enough, it was your first cap back in 2006 that also came against the Republic of Ireland. What do you remember about making your debut for the side?
I remember my family was there again in California, so a lot of them came down for that. Being pretty nervous. I remember just trying not to do anything stupid, but also trying to be myself and enjoy it and have fun. But just kind of being like, you know, deer in the headlights in the sense that, you know, you just have a big smile on your face the whole time and then you just kind of run around and enjoy yourself.
How do you prepare for something like that? You know that you're going to be stepping into an arena with players who are highly respected, you know, bordering on celebrity status within the country. You're all of a sudden thrust into that environment. How do you prepare yourself for that, and how are you welcomed into that environment, and how do you handle it?
I don't know if you can really prepare yourself for it, but I think that you can just embrace it, and you just kind of, you have to roll with it. I don't think you can go in with any plan, because your plan is always going to be usurped by something. I think you just have to really go with it and really, I think, enjoy it. I think the players that have come in, you know, just looking through my career, the younger players that have come in that have embraced the environment and enjoyed it and not been too stressed out, because you're not going to know all the ins and outs and you're not really going to know the ropes in the beginning. And I think if you focus on, you know, what you don't know and how overwhelming it is, it can get to you. But I think when you just enjoy yourself, at the end of the day, it's football. And I always felt like, you know, there was stuff that I could bring to the team, and I just wanted to play my game and enjoy myself and really just sort of be in the moment and embrace the unfamiliarity of it all, I think. And then eventually you get comfortable in it. But I think it's important to just really take in those moments. You're only going to have your first cap one time, or, you know, you're only going to be a young little rookie one time. So I think it's important to just really revel in that.
How did your life change? As I mentioned, that U.S. Women's National Team, very, very highly respected, very well followed, media publicity generated like no other national team probably in the world. You've earned your first cap. The eyes are on you now. How do you kind of deal with that, and how did your life change after you've represented the U.S. Women's National Team for the first time?
Yeah, I think it's interesting that when I first started coming in, like, Christine Lilly was still on the team, and the likes of that, and it's just like, it's just funny because it's surreal in all of these ways, because you're like, I had a poster of you on my wall, but I know you didn't have a poster of me on your wall because I was like 7 and you were already a superstar. So I think it's just funny to kind of, you know, come into that environment and be a peer of someone that's also your role model, you know. And I think in terms of life change, I think really, you know, I think after this last World Cup, that's when the life change really happened. I mean, it's different to obviously be on the national team, and we were supported well before that. But I think after this last World Cup is when everything just kind of blew up, and that was a really big life change and sort of, you know, being recognized as, you know, not only as an individual, but just the team, just how much more popular the team was really a little bit of a challenge to get used to, because it was like all of a sudden, you know, that people are recognizing you, and we went back to New York, and, you know, after the World Cup, and even though we lost, you still had this sort of hero's welcome, and that was the interesting part of it. But I think we all, you know, embrace it so much and just realize that this is what we want out of it. This is where we want to be going and the steps that we want to be taking, and this is what we deserve out of it. I think that, you know, the team has put in so much work for so many years, and really put an exciting product out on the field. I mean, it's one thing to put in the work. I mean, tons of people put in the work, but I think that we've really made it a desirable product to watch, and we're entertaining, and we're accessible to the fans, and I think that's something that everybody's really proud of.
I interviewed Morgan Bryan, I think it was just after or just before Christmas, and talks about how she felt going into that US Women's National Team environment with so many big personalities. I remember her saying, you know, that she was quite nervous. You've got the likes of Abby Wambach, who is, you know, a legend in the game. And like you say, she's got a poster on her wall, and then all of a sudden she's playing in the same team. You mentioned Christine Lilly being that player. Is there any kind of intimidation when you go and join a player like that you've looked up to, or do you just have to try and embrace it and really feed off of that quality and that stardom that the player has?
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of intimidation, for sure. I mean, it's like, how old was he? This is like, you know, you talk about Morgan Bryan going in against the likes of, you know, Abby or Carly or, you know, some of these other players. And I think that you have to, it's good to have a little bit of that, but I think you've got to get over that quickly. And I think that you definitely give them the respect that they deserve and what they've earned. But then, you know, it really does come down to everybody pulls their shirts on the same way. If you want to stay in the team, then you can't be intimidated by anyone. But I think in the beginning, it's okay and it's natural to have a little bit of that. And I definitely did, you know. And then hopefully the players, and I think everyone in our team is like this, but, you know, for the most part, I think all the players just, you know, can see when younger players are intimidated by, and you got to have a little fun with that and razz them up a little bit. But, you know, eventually take them under our wing, and we want them to be the best player that they can be. That's ultimately going to help everyone.
When you say having fun with them, Pina, I hope you're not referring to picking on them.
Yeah, I mean, you're not really supposed to bully people anymore, so it's like, that's what's down upon, so I like to call it other things. But yeah, like Morgan Bryan, I definitely bullied Morgan Bryan, but then, you know, it's a sign of affection too. I just love her. So we got to razz them a little bit. You can't just have an easy road, you know, on the team. We got to...
It's education, Pino. It's education.
Yeah, exactly. Right of passage.
So you make your debut in 2006 against Ireland. You get your first international goal against Taiwan later on that year. China 2007 is around the corner. And then unfortunately for you, you suffer an ACL injury, which forces you to miss the World Cup. And then you suffer another one that forces you to miss the 2008 Beijing Olympics as well. When you suffered those two injuries, having only just made it into the women's national team, what's going through your head? Is there a fear that you're going to struggle to reclaim your position? That it's as drastic as it sounds, that your international career is over before it's begun? Or is that there that determination, because you've missed those two tournaments, you are desperate to play in the next one?
Yeah, I think it's the latter, definitely. I never felt like anything with Ogre, I was just like, you know what, this really sucks. This is really bad timing for all of this. But in the same sense, I was very young. I was only, I think, 20 and 21 when it happened. So, you know, I still had 3 years of college left and knew that I just had to kind of get healthy and get my mind right and get my body right, and I would be back in there. But I never really had that moment of feeling like it was over. Even after the second one, it's funny, I was talking to my mom, and, you know, it was just kind of recently, but she was kind of rehashing this moment or thinking about this moment that we have where I think it was after my second surgery and I was just laid up, and she was just kind of going through and saying, you know, I'm so proud of you and you've accomplished so much. Kind of like, it's okay if this is like, if this is it. And I just looked at her, I'm like, I'm not done and I'm going to be fine. And for her, she was just kind of like, oh my gosh, she's had 2 surgeries and, you know, this is such a hard thing to come back from and just be proud of what you've done already. And I was like, oh, forget it, Mom. I haven't done anything yet. So it was kind of, I never had that moment of doubt about whether I've come back. It was just when.
You mentioned your mum there. One of the things that we never really think about for international athletes and women's soccer players, or in this case, is the importance of your support network, you know, your family. I mean, you're one of, I think, 5 siblings. You've got a twin sister. How important have they been in your career, and how much of a role have they played in, you know, over the years and the 100 caps that you've earned for the national team?
Oh, I mean, they're everything in that. You know, I always look back to where I, you know, where I started and what I had to do and what my parents had to do, really, to make sure that my sister and I could play competitively. And, I mean, every time I, you know, go out there and play, and really in the, you know, in the bigger moments and, you know, the last World Cup and the last Olympics, like, I felt like it was all of us out there. And in a way, everyone's had their, you know, their hand in the things that I've been able to do on the field, and it always just feels like a big family effort, and I always love having them there, and they come to as many games as they can, and for me, it's never about, oh, I've gotten this far. It's, I've always, you know, especially being a twin, I've always been a we, not a me, and so it's always, you know, we played, and we, you know, we played on this club team, and we played in college, and even now, I still feel like, you know, I can always call my sister and ask her for advice or get her take on the game, and my parents too are still just so supportive and so involved in it, and I love that. I love having them, you know, that interested and that involved, and it's something that they love as well. It's funny, my dad jokes with my mom because she would want to be the coach probably if she could, but he calls her the West Coast Director of Operations for U.S. Soccer. So she thinks she's in charge, and she likes to keep herself involved. It's pretty funny.
And when you were recovering from those two, sorry, going back, when you were recovering from those two serious knee injuries, did you have regular contact from U.S. Soccer, from the coach at the time? Were you in contact with, I'm going to assume it was Pia, who was probably in charge back then, 2007, 2008, was Pia monitoring your progress? Were you in contact with US Soccer to kind of keep them updated on how you were getting on?
Not so much. I mean, I think I did the first one when Greg Ryan was the coach, 2007, and after that World Cup, Pia took over, so it was kind of a change up there, and I never came in with Pia until after that Olympics, so the beginning of 2009. So I think as I got healthy and as I started, you know, playing in college, and I played my senior season out, I think she kind of kept tabs on me, but I didn't really have much contact with them while it was happening.
So you make a comeback, and you go to your first Algarve Cup in 2009, and I think you scored in one of the games as well, losing to Sweden in the final on penalties. Would have been probably your first opportunity to spend a considerable amount of time away with the squad in a camp, away from the US, away from an environment that you're familiar with. Do you remember what it was like being in the Algarve? And obviously you've appeared in Algarve Cup since then. But do you remember that one specifically, and how important that was for you in embedding yourself into that squad?
Yeah, definitely. I loved it. I loved being in with the squad and loved being in the team in that kind of environment where we got to play lots of games. I think we had had maybe one camp before that, kind of just a training camp. So to come off the back of a long training camp and then be able to go into a tournament and play a bunch of games is always something that I love. But yeah, I remember the games and playing pretty well in the tournament, I thought. You know, it was kind of like my first time back in a long time. So I think that I was just excited to be back in and so happy to be playing, be able to play games and kind of have that experience, you know, kind of coming off a time where, you know, I had a good college season, but then it was like, okay, now this is what I want to do. You know, this is, I'm a pro now. So it was cool to have that experience and be able to play all those games.
You've earned quite a few caps at the Algarve Cup. I think you were named player of the tournament in 2013, if I'm not mistaken. You can correct me if I'm wrong. It's a long way from home, but it's a tournament that the US continue to participate in on a year-to-year basis. Why is that tournament in particular beneficial and important for the US in your eyes?
I mean, really, two reasons. Games and great competition. It's brilliant for us. I wish that we had more tournaments like that we could go to or we could host one. But it's so good to be able to go, get a good week of training or 10 days of training when you should go a bit early. And then to be able to play usually, you know, top-tier international teams and four really good games in a competitive type environment where, you know, it's not just one friendly. It's, you know, there's actually something on the line and, you know, title on the line, at least for the Algarve, and it's something that I think, you know, is useful in terms of, you know, backing up games like we have to do in the Algarve, and that's something that we don't get to do that often, play that many games in such a short amount of time. So I think, you know, leading into a world championship, you know, and almost use it as a trial run, but then just to get games. I mean, I think, you know, the one thing that's always been frustrating for me with the national team is that we just don't play enough games. You can't play enough games just if you only go to the national team. So now having the league for 6 months out of the year is brilliant, but the rest of the year, kind of like, you know, you might play one game a month or two games a month, and that's just not that many. So I think for us to go there and be able to get a bunch of games is brilliant.
Okay. Well, incidentally, if you say that, as far as I'm concerned, the US play a lot more international friendlies and international matches than other countries, but I guess what we have the advantage of over here in Europe is that we have European championships and qualifying for major tournaments like that. So I guess that's where we have the upper hand. We come to 2010, qualifying for the 2011 World Cup, which would become your first major tournament. Didn't quite go according to plan qualifying, did it? You ended up finishing third in qualification and having to play Italy in a playoff. For a team with the amount of quality that you guys have and the expectation that's on your shoulders, what was the feeling in the camp when that qualification period finished and you knew you had to have that game against Italy?
Well, funny, initially, I think people didn't know that there was a playoff. Some people were, like, crying and, you know, thinking that we were out of it. But I think after, you know, we figured out what we had to do, that was it. We were super goal-driven. Super motivated. It was like, we got to win this third place game, and then we got to go win these two games. We won 1-0 in Italy. We came home, and I think won 1-0 again in Chicago. So very, very business-like in a way. It was kind of like, okay, now it's time to buckle down. Not that we weren't buckled down. I mean, it was a, you know, really good game played by Mexico, and that, I think it was the semifinal. It beat us. But it was like, you know, just that feeling of, we're going to qualify, and we're going to go to Italy, and we're going to win that game, and then we're going to come home, and we're going to qualify, and then everyone can go on the vacation that they already planned and then had to cancel and then had to replan.
So there was never any doubt, there was never any issues that existed within the squad after that qualification period?
No, definitely not. Definitely not. Definitely showed the resilience of the team and the... I guess the strength of us mentally. It wasn't easy. I mean, we just went through this. First of all, we went through, you know, our club season and came right off the back of that, went into training camp. Right off the back of that, went down to Mexico for, you know, a long and grueling qualification, and then had to, you know, basically have 4 or 5 days off and then immediately go straight to Italy and then come straight back and play in Chicago. So it was tough. It was, you know, physically, it was very demanding, and I think that, you know, our mentality really got us through that and really showed in those moments.
So you then have the pleasure and the delight of being selected in Pearson Haga's 2011 Women's World Cup US Women's National Team squad, or roster as you guys say. What was the overriding feeling? Was it relief? Was it, yes, it's finally my time after having to sit out the two previous major tournaments because of your injuries?
Oh, I was like, hell yeah, I'm going to the World Cup. That's just like the best, you know, pure joy moment. You know, one of them at least in my career. It wasn't like, oh, I've overcome so much, I deserve this, or oh, this is, you know, what I've worked for. It was just like, yeah, this is it. I have put work in, and I've worked very hard, and you know, given up a lot and all that. But really, it was more just like, hell yeah, I'm going to the World Cup.
Now, in 2007, Kelly Smith, when she scored one of her goals, she took her boot off, kissed the boot, and was kind of raising it to the crowd. And it was kind of one of the iconic images of that tournament. Certainly here in England, people still remember that, and there are images that you still see in articles when you see an interview of Kelly Smith. In the game against Colombia that you had in 2011, when you came on as a sub, you scored almost straight away. You didn't take off your boot and kiss it. You decided to pick up a microphone and sing a bit of Bruce Springsteen. Yeah. Do you want to explain why you did that and what motivated you to
come? I was trying to avoid the yellow card.
Trying to avoid the yellow card.
Take anything off of your jersey, I think you can yuck. Yeah, we had talked about it before. I mean, I love celebrating. I think that if you score a goal, you should celebrate. Not that you have to do something extravagant every time, whatever, but, you know. And some people are like, oh, it's cocky and arrogant to think about what you're going to do before. But, you know, I think that it's all in good fun. We're not doing it to, you know, get out another team or embarrass another team. It's just, for us, it's just joy and it's fun. It's like the Brazilians when they do their crazy dances, or Swedish had a dance that they did, or, you know, anybody does something. So I think that's just like a pure joy moment in the game. And we were actually, I think we're the Born in the USA idea came from, because we were in this area in Germany that has a really huge military population, U.S. military population. So 2 days before, we had an open training session for the military families, and there was like 500 or 600 people there. We talked to them for a long time, and it was just like so touching that so many people came out, and then a ton of them came to the game. So there was a huge American presence at that game, so we thought it would be a nice little tribute to them.
I thought it was brilliant. I remember it at the time. It was brilliant. I thought it was hilarious. I thought it was great. I think we should have more players singing down a microphone when they score. I want another rendition. If you score, if you score in this World Cup, Pino, what have you got lined up for us this time round?
Oh, I don't know. I got to start thinking about it. I mean, I've been thinking about it a little bit, but yeah.
As long as it's on your mind.
We're on turf, so the devil knee slide is out. That's
yeah.
But
do not be doing that.
Think of something more clever.
Yeah, do not be doing that. Do not be doing that. So you progress beyond beyond the group stage. You get to the latter stages, and you come up against Brazil. You find yourself behind. Well, sorry, you find yourself ahead, but then Rachel Buehler gets sent off. Brazil have a penalty saved by Hope Solo, but then the referee orders it to be retaken, brings it to 1-1. You come on in the second half and the game goes to extra time. What did Pearson Haag say to you when she threw you on in the 55th minute you came on, something like that? What did Pearce say to you when she told you to get ready and get on the pitch?
Oh, God, I don't remember. I don't know if she really said much, but I just knew we had to win. You know, that's kind of that moment that, I don't know if you need to be told what to do in that kind of game, then you're struggling. But just try to, you know, play my game and, you know, be aggressive and attack and try to make something happen. And it was actually it was a really bizarre game, rhythm-wise. No, neither team had a rhythm, and it was very sort of choppy, and I couldn't really get into the game. I wasn't really playing that well, but, we just kind of kept at it. It was just one of those games where it was kind of like, geez, something is coming, you know, and the energy started to build, and, you know, the crowd kind of got on our side, and, you know, the rest is history.
Game goes into extra time. You find yourself 2-1 down, early doors. Time is ticking, and you get into the last few minutes of normal time. In fact, you're going into injury time. Be honest, did you think it had escaped you and that you were going to be on the plane home?
Yeah, when the ball went down in the corner, Cristiani had it down in the corner, dribbling around. It was past 120. It was past the overtime. And, you know, Erica had just kind of done a big major dive in the box and made a big drama about it. And so I thought, I don't know, maybe we have a little bit more time. But I think I was more so thinking, I can't believe she's not blowing the whistle. And then it was like, it came out from Krieger, came across to Carly. I couldn't believe she wasn't blowing the whistle. Carly passed it to me, and then I took one touch and hit it as hard as I can, tried to get it in the box. I didn't see Abby, but I knew that she would be there. She better be there. The most accurate thing that I've ever done in my life.
Now, USA have it, and they've just got to get everybody forward now. No sense defending anymore. Lloyd's got to get this pass off to Rapinoe, and everybody's got to bomb forward now. Rapinoe gets a crossing. It's towards Wombat. Can you believe this? Abby Wombat has saved the USA's life in this World Cup.
Well, Abby described it as the perfect ball. She said, you've got an opportunity down the left flank. Send the ball in, and it just popped over that defender's head. I was sitting on that back post and headed it in near post. I'm so happy it went in. Your description of it was, I just took a touch and friggin' smacked it with my left foot. I don't think I've hit a ball like that with my left foot. I got it to the back post, and that beast in the air just got hold of it. So slightly different descriptions there, Pino.
Yeah. I mean, that's what it felt like. Me, at least. I wouldn't say that I crossed the ball. I would say that I hit it. And I think it was better that way. I think if I would have tried to cross it, I just don't have that. I don't have that kind of power on my left side to be trying to whip it in from that far and reach Abby. So I hit it as hard as I could. And it was a perfect ball over a defender's head just out of the reach of the goalkeeper. And, she, you know, Abby had a lot to do. I think everyone likes to talk about, you know, the cross and how good it was, but she had a lot to do on that. I think she was just outside the post and to keep the concentration for, you know, the player jumping right in front of her, goalkeeper coming out. It was just a brilliant header by her.
And then you had to compose yourself for a penalty shootout as well, in which you took a kick and you scored. Now, we won't talk about the final, because I'm sure that's one that you probably would choose to forget, so we won't go into any detail on the final. But 2012 gives you another opportunity to try and overcome that disappointment because you have the London 2012 Olympics to prepare for. Just before the games, you did an interview with an American magazine and decided to come out as gay. I can't begin to imagine what that must have been, what was going through your head or why you decided to make the decision when you did. And to be fair, it's no one else's business but yours. But what was it that kind of made you decide this is the time that I want to do it? And was there ever any... Was there ever any doubts in your mind that by coming out it could change people's perception of you or hinder your international career because you were still very much a part of that US team, still an integral part of that team, and you had this huge decision to make? Why was it that you decided to do it when you did?
It had actually been sort of in the works since the plane ride home from the final. In Frankfurt, I was talking to my best friend, Laurie Lindsay, and, you know, I had been thinking about it sort of vaguely, I mean, forever, really, you know, since I was gay. I mean, I think something early in my career, this is something that I kind of thought about it, but I didn't really think about that much. And, you know, as I got a little bit older and, you know, we got a little bit more popular and everyone started to, I guess, know each of the individuals a little bit more, it started to feel weird that I wasn't out, because I'm very proud to be gay and very happy being gay and nothing to hide and feel very comfortable in that. And, you know, we were kind of talking on the plane ride home. She's like, you need to come out. You should just come out. And I was kind of like, yeah, I should. You know, my agent was on that plane actually as well, so we kind of had a little conversation about that. And then from there, it was just sort of kind of putting things in motion to have it done. And I wanted to do it in a way that, you know, felt good for me, and I wanted to do it with an outlet, a gay outlet, and it was Out Magazine that I chose, and I wanted to do it in a way that felt good, in the way that I could, you know, tell the story the way I wanted to. And, you know, I think it wasn't like, oh, I'm going to wait right until the Olympics so more people will it. I mean, it came together sort of organically that way, but, you know, in another sense, I did want people to see it, and I think it is important. I think that I have a platform, and that platform grew tremendously after the World Cup, and I think that that's, you know, a platform that I wanted to use to talk about gay issues, and to be out, and to be very proud of that, and to talk about it in the right way, and to be very open and have other people be able to be open too, because I felt like everybody knew. It wasn't a big secret. I think, you know, the media probably knew, and obviously my, you know, family, friends, everybody knew. I'd been out since college, so I think it was just a matter of feeling like it was the right time, and being okay, and really, you know, deciding for myself that I wanted to be an advocate in that way. And for me, it didn't feel okay to not be out. And so I made that happen. And I never really felt like there was going to be any negative repercussions. I mean, I knew that, of course, there's going to be, you know, some people out there who disagree or whatever, but it's also kind of an interesting thing. You know, people say, oh, well, you're a role model, and you know, the kids coming to the games and what if parents disagree. And it's kind of a funny thing because I think that people already knew me in a certain sense, and they already kind of had a beat on my personality and people like that. And I was someone that was charismatic, and people kind of knew me in that sense anyway. So then it wasn't like, oh, now that I'm gay, they're going to be like, oh, now I don't really like her. You know, it's kind of like, I've already won you over in a sense, and now this is just a part of who I am. Really felt like there was going to be a huge negative backlash, and the team was incredibly supportive, and the federation, and, you know, the coaches and everybody. So I had a really positive experience coming out, and I'm really grateful for that.
Did it make you feel like you had a weight lifted off your shoulders? Did you feel like you could go into that Olympic Games with complete freedom and the opportunity to be as you say, be who you wanted everyone to know you were, and to just go ahead and play your game without things like that hanging over you.
Yeah. I wouldn't say that before that I had a huge weight on my shoulders, but I definitely think that I was lighter in a way, and that I was, you know, just 100% me. And it was cool. People could ask about it if they wanted to, or they, you know, in the right setting, or they couldn't at all. And it was kind of like, this is out there. And, you know, my girlfriend at the time, she was there with me at the Olympics, and my family was there. And that was just, you know, it was one part of everything that I am as a human being. And I'm so thankful that I came out. It's been one of the best things I've ever done in my life.
Well, I think it's fair to say, and I think I speak on behalf of a lot of people, you know, the work that you do, the fact you're a member of Athlete Alley, and the fact that you do speak so openly about it, I'm sure has inspired many, many others to follow suit. But looking at that Olympic Games, it went very well for you. Went through the group stages, had a great game against France as well. And then you come across, you get the chance to play at Old Trafford, and you have an absolute thriller of a game against Canada in which you score twice, one of which is from a corner. Now, when I was doing my research, that was the first and only goal to be scored in a men's or women's Olympic match direct from a corner.
Yeah, I had heard that after. I didn't know that.
But, I mean, what was that game like to be involved in? Because that was, without question, the game of the tournament. But what was it like to be involved with? Because it was such a... It swings and roundabouts. It was such a, you know, up and down game for both sides. But to be involved in it, what was that like at such an iconic venue as Old Trafford as well?
Brilliant. It was an absolutely brilliant game. You'd be so greedy if you asked for anything more out of the game. I think you had, first of all, the product on the field, the football, I thought was really good. Canada played really well. Sinclair was out of her skin. I thought we played well. You had the dramas, you had goals, you had the pre-existing rivalry, which got racked up a few hundred notches after that game. So you had the rivalry between the U.S. and Canada that's been there for years and years, and the semifinal, and, you know, in Old Trafford in Manchester, it was just a brilliant game. It was something that, you know, I'll never forget, never.
And then you have the opportunity to play at the home of football, Wembley Stadium, opportunity to avenge that defeat against Japan from the previous year, and a couple of goals from Carly Lloyd is enough to get you that gold medal. What was it like standing on that podium in the middle of Wembley Stadium with the national anthem going?
Oh, just got chills thinking about that. It was like a dream come true. I mean, it was just so cliche in every way, but it was just like, you know, a childhood dream come true. I love the Olympics. Always been a huge fan of the Olympics. And just, you know, knowing how close we got the year before to bringing home that ultimate prize and being able to put a whole tournament together, win every game, which I don't think has been done before, and go on the run like we did. And to have it, I felt like it came from so many different places in that Olympics. Whenever we needed, you know, someone to step up, whenever something needed to be done, someone stepped up and did it. It was just such a fairy tale moment.
Per Sundhage leaves not long after the Olympics, and Tom Samani comes in and he brings new ideas. There's new faces that are brought into the squad. Quite a high profile departure sees him leave his role after the Algarve Cup, I think it was last year in 2014. For you, having played under him, how disappointing was it to sort of see him go? I mean, you can't have any control over it, I know, but just as you're getting to know a coach and just as he's trying to enforce his ideas, he's out the door and you're bringing, you're having to play and perform under another person and another coach moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, it was very disappointing for me professionally and personally. I've known Tom for quite a few years now and consider him a friend and someone that I can always go to and always have a bit of banter with. I personally got a lot out of being coached by Tom and being under him. I think that his knowledge of the game and, you know, tactically his ability to break things down, I thought was really good. And I think it took him a while to get going in the system, and there was a lot of different reasons for that, and it took him a little while to get an assistant coach, and I think that kind of hurt him a little bit. But, you know, he wanted to get the right person. And maybe he wasn't the perfect person for the job as a whole. But personally, I felt like I got a lot out of him. So it was disappointing and, you know, shocking, obviously. Felt like it came out of nowhere a little bit. But in the same sense, it's, you know, as Tom would say, it's a funny old game, and you got to get on with it. And I think that I think we did that well. I think us as a team, you know, because there were mixed reactions. I think, you know, some people were happy about that and some people were not. And I think as a team, we did a good job of putting that aside and realizing that, okay, someone new is coming in and we have to get on board. And ultimately, we all want the same thing. We all want to win the World Cup and win games and play a style that we think is acceptable and, you know, professional style, and we want to do well and have good performances. So I think that everyone did a really good job of sort of, you know, accepting it and giving themselves the time to feel how they felt about it, and then, you know, moving on with it. And I think that, you know, Tom would obviously want the same thing, and he's, you know, continued to do his work, took a little break, and doing a little bit of work with Canada now.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. Yeah. Well, that brings us.
I saw him recently, and I said we should have had some sort of non-compete clause with Canada, but I guess if you get fired, you can't really put that on someone.
So no, not at all.
Laugh about that.
Not at all. Well, it brings us nicely onto now. And Jill Ellis has obviously been the coach for the last year or so. Will be the coach that leads you into the World Cup. She made the decision to announce her squad early on. You have been named as part of that 23-player roster. No one is really surprised that you're in there, but how much of a relief was it when you got that phone call to say that you would be going to Canada?
I mean, it's something that you can just never take for granted. It's something that I was thrilled to be named. I'm so happy and feel absolutely honored to be, you know, representing my country in another World Cup. It's one of those things in life, no matter, you know, how good you are. I think, you know, Lionel Messi and likes of Cristiano Ronaldo and, you know, those top players as well would feel the same way. You're just honored every time you get to pull on that shirt, especially in a World Cup, and especially so close to home. I know it's in Canada, but we feel a little bit of our World Cup too.
I guess one of my questions would be, what's the kind of feeling in the camp? I think it would be fair to say that the last 12 months have been probably up and down. There's been some results that probably haven't gone your way, but there have been results and performances that have been very impressive. But now that you look at that group that you've got, maybe compare it to that in 2011, where can this team go in your mind? I'm sure you're going to say you can go on and win it, but why do you think you can if you do indeed think that is possible?
Yeah, I definitely think we can win it. I think that we're so deep in pretty much every position. I mean, you look down our roster and we're spoiled a bit at so many positions, and I think we have different kind of players as well. It's not like we have, you know, everyone sort of the same in their own right. I mean, I think if we need to be a bit more physical and have a bit more of a direct game and use our athleticism, I think we can do that. If we need to slow the pace down and tactically beat a team and possess and chill games out, I think we can do that. And I think our ability tactically to be versatile and to be adaptable is something that is going to be really important for us. We have 7 games, hopefully, a lot of travel on turf. It's going to be really tough. We're not going to be able to run and gun every single game 90 minutes. So I think the ability for us to change it up and to use, you know, our whole roster is going to be a huge advantage for us and something that we gain a lot of confidence in.
Is the challenge for you now between the time that we're recording this show and kicking off in that first game, staying fit and making sure that you're able to perform for the Seattle Reign in the game that you've got remaining and in the training camps that you've got remaining between now and the tournament starting? Is the challenge now getting that balance right between being competitive, whether it be in a match or whether it be in training, but also looking after yourself to ensure that you are fit and that you are ready and that there's no injuries or knocks or anything like that that comes your way? And how do you do that? How do you get that balance?
Yeah, I think it is a funny balance, right? Because you need to push on and you need to, you know, be competitive and you need to, you know, really give everything in these games. I think that's really important to feel like you're in form and to feel like you're clicking. But in a sense, since you don't want to do anything stupid or have anything stupid done to you, so I think you're mindful of that. As a professional, but I think you also, you know, you have to keep clicking over and you have to get into it. You can't really, you know, be saving up your stores, so to speak, for the World Cup. It kind of doesn't work like that. I think the more you play, the more the ball's at your feet, the more you can, you know, get in rhythm and get in form. That's why I think these games in the NWSL are vital for us to be able to get, you know, 90 minutes and feel like you're played in is really important. But they're always being mindful and just off the field as well, being super mindful of taking care of your body and recovery and travel and everything. It all sort of adds up in the end. So just taking really good care of yourself.
Well, the next challenge is against Ireland, as we mentioned, will be, if selected, your 101st cap. Going back to where it all started for your first cap, an incredible career, Pino. If you had to pick out one highlight, I know it'll be difficult, but if you had to pick out one highlight, what would it be of those 100 caps?
That's a tough one. One of my favorite moments ever in my career, walking out of the tunnel for the final in the World Cup. I mean, obviously it didn't end the way that we wanted it to, but it's an accomplishment in and of itself, I think, to get to the World Cup final. And just the run that we had, I just remember, you know, walking out and having my family there and having the biggest smile on my face. Normally I'm a little bit more straight faced walking out, but not that day. And then obviously, you know, the Olympic final, being able to stand on that podium and get that gold medal, share that with my teammates and my family, was just the best.
And what about the funniest moment in those caps? Probably too many.
The fun moment?
The funniest moment, most humorous.
Oh, funniest. Oh, jeez. I just can't name them. One of the funniest moments was coming back in from the Brazil game, and Rachel Buehler, well, first of all, before she's been shown the red card, and she's kind of lingering around, and we're like, Rachel, you gotta go. You've been ejected from the game. You've got to go. She's like, oh, my God. You know, she's obviously shot. She's off the field, whatever. We don't see her for the next 2 hours. So we go back in, and she's actually still crying, but she's not crying any tears. Like, she's actually cried all of her tears out, and she's probably so dehydrated that she's, like, she's crying, but there's no tears coming out. She's just doing the cry face. But it was, like, a legitimate cry. And I think for her, just so much relief. I mean, obviously, you know, seeing a red card, you know, in a quarterfinal match and going down and, you know, the whole gamut. It's just, she felt awful. I think it was just a sense of, you know, utter relief on her part. But she had been crying for the last, you know, hour and a half or something, all through the rest of the game, all through overtime, all through the penalty kicks, all through until they let her. You know, she was watching the game in this tiny doping room with our general manager at the time, Cheryl Bailey, and she just cried herself right out of tears. That was one of the funniest moments, going back in and seeing her and just seeing the relief on her face.
Who's been your favorite roommate or most interesting roommate?
Laurie's my favourite roommate.
Laurie Lindsay?
Laurie Lindsay. She's been my favourite roommate.
Okay. I have a question. Does your hometown of Reading still celebrate Megan Rapinoe Day on the 10th of September?
I'm not sure. I got to make sure of that, though. I got to make sure people are being vigilant about it. I hope they do.
So you haven't been back to Reading on the 10th of September to kind of, you know, make the most of your celebrity status and try and get a load of freebies in the area?
I haven't. I need to start doing that. I need to start showing up and demanding that people recognize it.
Well, Megan, it's been a wonderful 100 caps, and I'm sure there's many more to come, still at an age where there are still many tournaments ahead for you, and it's certainly been an interesting career up to now. Lots of highs, a few lows, but absolutely no doubt whatsoever that every time you've gone on that field, you've given absolutely everything for that team and brought a lot of joy to a lot of people's faces, I'm sure. So thank you very much for joining me for this interview, and I do wish you the very best of luck with the World Cup.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me on again.